Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host today. This is another in our ongoing series, Surviving the 21st Century, a look at health and nutrition in our modern world, and much of it is a very depressing picture. Joining me are my good friends, Manny Barling and Ashley Brooks. Hello to both of you.
Well, good morning and good afternoon to all our listeners.
Hello, everyone. Hi, Simon.
Well, hello. It's not often that I get the opportunity to report some good news. And I know this is slightly outside of the normal area that we talk about, but I consider food and health to be all part of the environment. And I read a great article in Scientific American this week. They're reporting that a team of researchers in Australia have been monitoring the ozone hole over the Antarctic for many years, and they've noticed that it's beginning to shrink in size. It's also curious to note that it's been something like 22 years since the use of CFCs, the major culprit for the problem, were banned. In some ways, I view this as validation that sometimes man can undo the harm that we do to our own environment. Would you both agree with me?
Well, yes, I'm not sure about man. Man seems to fight all that. But yes, if people listen and people are willing to act, we can make change.
And I do have one very quick question for you both. Clearly, this is likely going to be our very last program. I'm wondering what special plans you might have for dealing with the rapture that is scheduled to begin at 6 p.m. Pacific time today.
I just wanted to say, Simon, that I may cut out early. I mean, I may be gone within a minute today because I have to run to the store and get a really great-looking dress, and I will do what I can. Do I have to have my makeup and my dress on time for this? Is there a specific time?
I don't know. The radio guy who announced this, I think he's up in the San Francisco area. He really didn't talk much about the need to dress up, but I think that would probably be a good thing.
What kind of high heels do you think I should wear? Oh gosh, I'm nervous now. What color are you wearing? What's Jan wearing?
Well, my plans are somewhat different. Seeing as no one really knows exactly what this is going to involve, I'm just going to go outside after the program and make sure that all of my tomato plants are covered just in case it involves frost tonight.
Oh, that's a great idea, Simon. I would not have thought of that. How about you, Manny?
No. Actually, I'm speaking for all men in America. I've intended to get my thongs out, some Bermuda shorts, maybe a Hawaiian shirt, a brewski, and kind of sit by the pool and watch this massive earthquake this guy is talking about. Because, you know, we live in California, and we're used to those earthquakes. So it may end the world everywhere else, but in California, well, you know, it's just another bump in the earthquake road.
You know, I think one of the good things for me, Simon, with this whole rapture thing, though, is the fact that I think every once in a while it's sort of like having a peace movement where this may be a little off, but everybody is forced to really contemplate and think about the day, if that really is true, and what if, and what would you do? And, I mean, all kidding aside, for me, that's how it hit me. And I went, well, maybe it's a way of uniting people to prayer and things that are important for the day.
You know, it's funny. I went to a different spot. I went to private Catholic schools, and as anyone knows, the nuns demand you attend, and there's just no excuse for not being there. Well, I was about 8 years old when the famous Criswell predicted the end of the world in the early 50s, and, oh, it was as big a news as it is now, and only people tended to believe that stuff a little more back then. So, you know, everybody was just really crazy about it. So a bunch of friends of mine in school kind of looked around and said, boy, if the world's coming then, why are we getting up and going to school? So we said, the heck with it. We kept school, figuring, what the hell, the world's going to end anyway. Well, it didn't end. So the next morning we had to get up and deal with their parents, going to school, the whole number. And, oh, God, we got our butts kicked for skipping school.
You were fourth grade, right, weren't you?
I was about the fourth grade, yeah, somewhere around there, third or fourth grade. And so after that, I didn't pay much attention to the world coming to the end.
Oh, you mean I can't take out that credit card today and just run it up, zap it up like crazy on those new shoes and that great-looking outfit? Darn.
I'm surprised Walmart didn't schedule world coming to the end,
sale
today, right? You know?
I don't know. I didn't look at the sales. Pardon?
Rapture special.
Get your last coupons. But, you know, when you...
Okay.
You talk about all these environmental things, particularly the ozone layer. I think they do relate to where everybody is. I mean, one of the things we're going to discuss today is the level of various excrement in urine, because, ladies and gentlemen, you're now hitting the excrement in urine show around the world, which I think also impacts the fluorocarbon layer because of all the different chemicals are used. And I just wanted to throw some numbers at everybody because these just blow my mind. We wrote a blog that's published on Blogger News in the last day or so about basically, I believe the title of it is Statistics on Foodborne Related Illnesses and Deaths Caused by Salmonella and all these various other things that come from factory farms, genetically modified foods, and, you know, a variety of other things. So in the course of it, we wrote some interesting statistics about the amount of excrement that's floating around this country as a result of all of these factory farms. Well, then it started us going, oh my goodness, maybe we should take a look at what this is all around the world. Well, let's start with the world and give everybody an idea of what we're talking about. There's 77.3 billion pounds of urine and fecal matter a day that come from cattle alone. Well, that's in the world. So I tried to figure out humans, the rest of the birds and all the animals, and it's over 100 billion pounds of urine and fecal matter a day in this world. I mean, multiply that by a full year, 365 days, you're about 3.6 trillion pounds of manure and urine a year. I mean, where does all this go? And the numbers are just staggering. So I'm going to throw this number and we'll start talking about it. In the U.S., there are over 22,000 factory farms, CAFOs, you know, these farms where they confine animals, and they actually put a type of catheter on them so they try to urinate into one big pool.
Some they do, not all of them, right.
Yeah, and it all, either that or drops through the floor into these containment things that are called manure lagoons, and some are stored outside, and some are the size of football fields, and even double the size of football fields. So a little research, and I want to thank the University of North Dakota for providing some, and the USDA, the other. There are about 97 million cattle in the U.S. right now, and they're excreting 14 times as much fecal matter as a human does a day. 14 times as much. That's about 1.3 billion pounds of fecal matter a day on these farms. And that doesn't include the more than 150 million gallons of urine a day from the same cattle. So the question today, where does it all go? What does it do? How is it affecting our environment? And more importantly, how is it affecting humans? And I want to compliment Ashley, who got us started on foodborne illnesses, which is something through all our years of nursing and researching that has bothered us. So Ashley sort of whipped Simon up into a frenzy about this, and the more we researched it, was the more horrified we were. So Ashley, tell us a little about foodborne illnesses.
When you look at statistics on them, it's very confusing. Statistically, you can go from 1999, where, the current one, University of Florida, says there's 600,000 foodborne illnesses per year. But then you look at the CDC, so you have to jump from place to place to actually find numbers. In 1999, there were 200 known foodborne illnesses and disease in the United States. They were responsible for 76 million illnesses in this country. More than 325,000 hospitalizations.
Is that a day or a week or a month or what?
This is per year.
Per year.
5,000 deaths a year. Now, when you look at the 2011, and there's going to be conflicts, and I'm going to explain why there's conflicts between dates and times. And so if I say one number and you're looking at it and you go, oh, my gosh, she's wrong, this is the number, because University of Florida says 600,000. But I'm looking at 78 million in the CDC. 2011, there were 200 to 800,000 adults that are hospitalized, one out of every six, and depending upon the stat, others say it's one out of four, Americans are sick with foodborne illnesses daily.
Well, let's try and put that into numbers. If one out of four Americans suffers some kind of food effect from this, we're talking about 70, 80 million a day. And somewhere there, you had the daily hospitalizations, right?
Right, but that was for 1999. We had 325,000. But the CDC is now saying, or someone else is saying, the CDC has increased it by 13% a year. So it's 13% times that number. And in 2010, adjusted number of foodborne illnesses, Simon, listen to this one, 86 million people a year in 2000. 86 million people last year were sick with foodborne illnesses. 9,000 deaths occurred last year. And this does not include unreported illnesses or people who just don't go to see the doctor, or this is where the manipulation of stats occur. Manipulation occurs because, say, a person has a foodborne illness, it has been left untreated, they die from a kidney disease, and they die from kidney failure. Now, the primary death certificate will say that person died from a kidney disease. They will not have been tested for the foodborne illness, which means they do not even, that number doesn't even go on statistics. So right now, kidney disease, since 1999, has been increased by 104%.
Wow.
So, and again, manipulation of stats are, in 1999, okay, go ahead, Manny, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you know, let's stay with the stats here. I don't want to bomb everybody with stats. The question is, where does this all come from and why? Because the numbers just keep growing and growing. And it's one of the things that we point out so frequently in our books is we believe that factory farms is a principal source of this problem, something that many, many others in our country agree with us on. And when you look at this reoccurring numbers, it's hard for me to accept what is said to me by the various people in the factory farming business, that, oh, no, we don't do this, we don't do that. But how do you explain these numbers? Simon, you know, you're somewhat new to a lot of this. Do these numbers alarm you as much as they do us? Are we being reactionary?
No, not at all. In fact, I find the statistics very disturbing. 86 million cases of,
foodborne illnesses.
Foodborne illnesses. Now, we all know that, average family of four, think about it. Someone occasionally is not going to want to go to school because they got a tummy ache. Someone doesn't want to go to work. But those aren't included in the stats.
No.
The stats are people that, went to the doctor and were genuinely diagnosed with a foodborne illness. Now, one in four is a horrible statistic. I mean, that's just shocking.
It is shocking, and what's been the most difficult, it took us days to figure out what true numbers really are, and I don't know if we still have the true numbers, especially since, again, the University of Florida came out with this new thing in April saying there's 600,000 foodborne illnesses, here's our top 10. And, of course, on their list, I don't think E. coli was even on their list. So
right.
The manner in which these numbers are figured, it's difficult to see how they're calculating the numbers, even though I know CDC is doing their darndest to come up with the best, but there's a lot of hiding. I think one of the most startling was one of the ones that came up with was a white paper that I read on statistics of salmonella causation of salmonella infection in humans, and this was done by the Hamilton Food and Health Institute. The FDA said the overall burden of salmonella for 2001, now we're not even at 2010, estimated 1,203,650 illnesses, including 14,000 hospitalizations, 494 deaths. Now, when you go to the CDC to look what their stats are from 99 to 2006, they're saying we have 40 deaths. Well, there is a huge discrepancy. Now, the FDA is giving a totally different number. And now, by the way, with Michael Taylor, you go to the FDA to see if you can check that stat. If I didn't have access to these white papers, I wouldn't know the true number. And that number is not at all what got reported by University of Florida that's floating all over the Internet right now. So what are the true stats? It's hard to say, Simon.
Well, I think what you have to do is follow the money.
Yes.
You know, who paid for the stats?
Yeah, we're working on it. In fact, one of our next blogs is going to literally sit down and go through why these stats are created the way they are and the inconsistencies. Our first blog was just too long to include anything more. But the bottom line to all of it is that at times they're just flat guessing. They pull a number out of there and go, well, we think this is 13 times or should be multiplied by 13 times to approximate what's unreported. So there's a little bit of guessing going on, trying to figure out how many people don't report, how many things slip past everybody. But at the end of the day, they really don't know what they're talking about, and yet they publish all these huge statistics that basically say the world is coming to an end, when in fact it probably is in terms of this. It's really strange.
Well, I found the lowering of the numbers really disturbing to me. I mean, in 1999, when they went to do the statistics in 1999, now keeping in mind, genetically engineered came in during that time period, and during that time period, they were checking the to see if foreign-born or food-borne illnesses were increased, and they found a huge increase. So what they did is they went into the records and they started deleting people. They said, oh, you know, this person had it before, so we don't think they count. We're not sure over here. This is a mild case. It doesn't count. And how they went through the records, which is guesswork on my part from reading the subtext of what I'm reading, they then said, oh, no, it hasn't increased. So are those statistics a little fudged? Oh, what do you think, Simon?
Well, you know, I rather enjoyed mathematics in my school days, and one of my favorite subjects was statistics.
Oh, you and Manny. I mean, it's like you guys are two Brits at sea and having a good time.
Well, no, it's more that you can take a data set and present it in so many different ways. You can prove whatever you want to prove just by the way you manipulate the numbers. You don't change the numbers. It's just the manner in which you use them. No one seems to consider that, you know, when they read these reports, you know, people report what they want to report, not what the facts are.
And that's why I want to be very clear on, like, the foodborne illnesses that we just put out is because our statistics are different than the ones that are put out, because we're looking for the honest statistics. And it's the best ones we could come up with, Simon, looking through and sieving through and spending days looking at records trying to say, wait a minute, this page is different than that page. Which one's the truth? Now, the one with salmonella I tend to lean with, because the one in the FDA, it may even be higher. Because, or salmonella and campylobacter, the campylobacter bacteria is found in 2 million foodborne illnesses per year. 2 million. Now, this particular thing increased with factory farming and genetic engineering, according to the WHO. And it was increased, the data started at 2000, where it just became, it's 2 million per year. So when they started examining the factory farming of the chickens and the hens, which we'll talk about separately, the broiler chickens, 1 out of 8 had a foodborne illness when they checked it. 1 out of 20 had salmonella. So in the eggs, 1 out of 20,000, but that is, you know, but they're guessing at that because there's no way to really guess on the eggs, because what's happening with the hen is the salmonella is actually being born within and passed from hen to hen, so that it's within the ovaries of the hen in these factory farms, and every egg, when it's being developed and the shell is coming around it, that salmonella, flip a coin, which one's going to have the salmonella? And the salmonella is coming from the fecal matter, it's coming from the water, it's coming from, you know, the University of Iowa keeps saying you put animals in confinement, you're increasing the chances of more bacteria, more viruses, more parasites, more foodborne illnesses. Over and over, doctors across the country are saying this. But, you know, so for me, I would go with, just on those statistics, wouldn't you go with a higher number, Simon, saying, yeah, I would say there's at least, you know, 1.2 million people who have salmonella.
Well, I want to stop for a moment and put this in perspective, because I agree with all these numbers, but let's talk about what it means every day. Ashley sent me a little article about a little town in Oregon called Heppner. And, you know, right now Heppner had 2.5 inches of rain in a very short period of time. In Oregon, and anyone who lives on the West Coast will tell you, it rains in Oregon. And Heppner is, it's actually east of Mount Hood. It's just south of the Washington borderline and just west of the Idaho borderline. It's all farm and dairy territory. And according, first of all, to Farm Aid, and right now in Oregon, 330 farmers were leaving their land every week because they're now bringing in as many CAFOs and factory farms as they possibly can. Well, after this rain, it flooded all the CAFOs in the area.
2.5 inches of rain.
2.5 inches of rain, and it flooded these manure lagoons, the bad CAFOs, and all these factory farms we talk about. So they found E. coli bacteria in the water supply, and the lab results alarmed everybody so much they were driving down the main street. Could you imagine a small town, sort of like those B-movies, you know, when the monster's coming and they're using a loudspeaker, driving up and down neighborhoods, telling everybody that not to drink the water. And the heavy, so they blamed it on the heavy rains washing out all these farms. So they issued these warnings: do not drink the water without boiling it first. Okay.
What year is this?
This is
2011,
week.
Right?
No. This is a couple of days ago.
Okay.
This week.
Yeah. Thank you.
This is let the water.
May 19.
Yeah. Let the water boil for a minute. Let it cool before using or use the water. Okay. How about boiled or bottled water should be using for drinking, making ice cubes, brushing teeth, washing dishes, and food preparation until further notice? Well, come on. I mean, if you want to do all that in your home, you better get out and get yourself a vat, a big wood-burning stove, because you're going to go through 20, 30 gallons a day. In fact, it's dangerous to flush your toilet with that level of E. coli.
Absolutely.
So when you take a look at it, you basically means you cannot touch any water. And even the rainwater coming down is okay until it hits the ground. And then splashing out in rainwater after, you know, the water runoff from all these farms, walking around, gets it on your shoes, you drag in the house. I don't want to sound like an alarmist, but I don't think I'm being alarmist when city officials in a small town in America feel the need to drive down the street with a bullhorn going, "Don't drink the water." How much more dramatic can you get, right, Simon?
Well, I shared this story with my wife, Jen, this morning. And, you know, she said, "Boil water because there's shit in it."
It's really sad.
I ain't drinking it boiled or not boiled.
Yeah, I happen to agree with her.
And, you know, and Manny, one of the points for me that really hit me hard is the fact that early on, 20 years ago when we first got married, you used to want to go up to Oregon because you would talk about how beautiful it is up there and the gorgeous farms, and your friends were up there, and your buddies used to drive up there. And we just, it's one of the trips we have yet to drive up to. And it's so, it saddens me as we go from state to state and talk to various people in these various states to find out and read all these articles to find that, you know, what's happening across America. What's happening in Oregon was stunning to me.
Yeah, it should be. And therein lies one of the problems in our country, is that the country is under an assault from commercial businesses. You know, and we started out talking about fluorocarbons. There was a time when people felt like our world was under attack from fluorocarbons, and they were destroying the ozone layer, and we started to do something about it. Well, now the world, and particularly the United States, are under attack from these type of chemicals, and we need to, in some way, take some action and unite and do something to protect our country, or we're just going to be overrun with shit. And that's the only way to put it. I can't find a nicer or more discreet word for it. We are being overrun.
And getting back to, like, even the salmonella, Manny, when we're saying, you know, they're being, these eggs are actually inside the egg before the shell is developed. There, I want to run some numbers from 2008 of animals. There are 75 billion eggs produced in the United States per year. That's a lot of eggs with salmonella or campylobacter. And again, 83% of the broiler chickens consumed by the 83, according to Consumer Reports, 83% of the broiler chickens have bacteria in them, of either the campylobacter or the salmonella.
Well,
and
me,
wait, there are 8,792,000,000 broiler chickens sold per year in this country. So when you do 83%, that's a lot of chickens with a lot of diseases and a lot of foreign-born things that are running around our country. And the laying hens, this one really got me. There's 492,700,000 of the layer hens were killed for food. Now, these laying hens, they are injected with hormones and antibiotics for a two-year period to force them to lay eggs in the factory farms. It's like so upsets me that I'm like speechless. And during that time period, most of them become very ill. When they're too ill to actually lay hens, or these hens are too ill to lay eggs anymore, and they can no longer inject them, which means that these are, you know, they are spent within 2 years. These normal looking, or these hens that should look normal and healthy looking, you see beautiful pictures of, they are now going into the food.
Well, I want to add something. If this sounds alarming when Ashley gives us number of eggs, and how much was it again?
75 billion eggs are produced in the United States.
Well, people go, well, gee, you know, how bad can it be? Well, think about it. In 2010, we had 550 million eggs recalled from just Wright County Egg Farm in Iowa and the Hillendale Farms in Iowa. So, gee, it doesn't sound like very much, but, you know, because there's 75 billion eggs done, but there are only 350 million people in the United States. So literally, there was literally 1.5 or 1.7 contaminated eggs in this one recall alone for every human being. Or if only half the Americans 250 million people eat eggs every morning, on one single day in America, every American could have had two salmonella eggs for breakfast. So, you know, this isn't just alarmism. These are problems every day. So then you go to ask you statistics on the amount of people who have salmonella and all these other health problems. When you see these number of recalls, you see these numbers, it shouldn't be surprising that 78 million Americans became ill from salmonella. That's only one out of three or four that could have had those eggs. So if the infestation or infection statistics were higher per egg, conceivably half of the people in the United States could have become infected with salmonella. So these numbers are really, really very dangerous. And I pointed out earlier when we're off the air to my wife that, you know, if you take 0.1%, because the industry always says, oh, that's 0.1%. Well, 0.1% of 75 billion eggs is really about, what, 75 million eggs or somewhere around there, some huge number. So when you look at the total number of things that are going on, I don't care what percentage you apply to it. If it's 0.1% of that number, even the 0.1% of the salmonella eggs, if it leads to death, is still over 5,000 deaths a year, which is pretty much what we have.
It started out 5,000. Right now it's 9,000.
Yeah.
Depending upon which statistical data you want to look at. The FDA is just completely different, although it's blocked now. So.
Yeah, so, you know, it's sort of like one leads to another, to another, to another, and yet when you see the industry see these numbers and go, oh, that's impossible. But they're not impossible. What they are very logical. And I don't think that anyone who's sitting down looking at these numbers, which some numbers you can find on the Internet easily, some of them you cannot because the CDC tends to put these reports way back in the back burner. And as I joked in our blog, you have to be a cross between James Bond and Sherlock Holmes to get to them.
And what's interesting right now with the salmonella, salmonella has different names. It's sort of like E. coli. There's different numbers and different things given addressed to the E. coli depending upon what level of toxicity it has. And right now the salmonella is listed under enteritis. So it's another area you have to look at when you're looking at salmonella because you're not going to find it if you're looking for salmonella. So there you go. Try to find that one, Simon. Would you look there?
No, but I want to go back to statistics just for a second.
That's rare for you.
Wow.
No, statistics in general.
Okay.
Now, in actual fact, the 550 million eggs that were recalled were not destroyed. All right? They were reused, repurposed. Yeah, by the food industry.
Right.
So, do those 550 million come into any statistic? Probably not. Yeah,
because they're not
fit for human consumption. They can be repurposed and made fit for human consumption.
Well, let's talk about repurpose. Repurpose is such a nice word. I don't know how it's so nice all of a sudden here. You know, what happened to you, Simon? So, but let's talk, what does repurpose mean? Repurpose means they sold them to commercial food preparers on the agreement that they would cook them at above 160 degrees. Well, my goodness. That means that you still are going to have the same foods with the same problems, only guess what? They cooked at a higher temperature. Oh, boy.
It's supposedly destroyed at that temperature. But what they don't say is while you're destroying that at that temperature, along with the chickens, they're saying it's safe to do this chicken, but you better, and excuse my French, you better cook the hell out of it. That's the new recipe. Don't cook it at, you know, 3-2 or whatever, the 250, whatever it is. Cook the hell out of it. Put that in parentheses because that's part of the new recipe for everything. And that is the solution to cover the big lie, which is let's not take care of the serious problem, which is the factory farming. And PETA goes after it after animal abuse. And, yes, it's animal abuse. But the animal abuse is also in the fact that that's what you're being delivered.
Well, let's go a step farther. We had lunch.
Diseased animals because of it.
We had lunch a couple weeks ago with a friend of ours who we hope will be a guest, Ron Magnan, who owns the Nosh in Beverly Hills, which is a legendary meeting place where celebrities in the Beverly Hills sit down and have a little bagel and cream cheese and talk, much like Nate and Alice and some of the others. Well, they were complaining to us that what's it say about American food when they get warnings from the FDA that they have to cook everything well done? Well, you know, imagine going into a restaurant, because you're someone who likes your steaks rare, and asking for a rare steak and being told, I'm sorry, but it's not safe, or something along the lines of, gee, I think you have to sign a liability release if you want it to cook like that, or, excuse me, our lawyer will be out to counsel you in a moment. You know, I can think of a whole bunch of funny things to say about it that aren't really funny. And when I listened to them in the restaurant that day, because they certainly didn't find anything funny about it at all, it's becoming a tragedy when the solutions that you offer in this world are solutions that require people to change their habits to fit what's going on from food manufacturers. They don't change for us by giving us better quality food. They want us to change to eat what they're eating. And Ashley always jokes that at the rate they're going, they're going to have to genetically modify humans so they can eat this food.
It's the only way we're going to be able to tolerate this food. That's got to be next. I mean, they're genetically adding human DNA to animals to make drugs, so what's the next step? I mean, Eitan got passed, so what's the next step, Simon?
You know, when I eat food, I like to be able to taste it. And in my book, that does involve rare beef. I mean, I like it rare. I like the blood running. It's got taste. It's got flavor. It's a wonderful thing.
If a person is eating anything from factory farms, after looking at the statistical data, after studying these 250 foodborne diseases, it is not a safe thing for anybody to eat.
Okay.
And if it's not, it has to be cooked at such a high temperature, Simon, that that's the only way that meat can be eaten.
Well, Simon, you know, I always joke, when I was young and I've had to stop it, particularly with Crohn's disease, you know, I'd get in a restaurant and say, you know, how do you want your steak? And I used to love that favorite old line of, just shoot it twice and throw it on the plate, you know, which in the restaurant business means very, very rare. And, you know, but now you can't really say that with any confidence unless you know they're serving organic beef.
Well, I mean, the next thing is, you know, ceviche. We deep fry ours.
And it's too funny, Simon, the thought of it. It's also getting away from, when we talk about our book, Manny's Diet and Enzyme Formula, which we also cover enzymes in the first book with the arthritis book, and enzymes are the key to everything. And enzymes are the natural part of every piece of food that goes into a person's body. Those enzymes are a main key to the nutrition. Anything that gets to be cooked becomes denatured. When you denature that to the extent of where people have to cook the heck out of their food as part of their recipe, you know, next thing you're going to say, you're going to have to charcoal, and then, of course, charcoaling brings on cancer. So, you know, the deal is, it gets back to one lie led to another. The lie is, factory farming, we'll put it in confinement, no one will ever see. Well, no matter what you do, you know, it's coming out the door through the smell, it's coming out the door by, you know, permeating the people that live in the area, it's permeating our food, it's making everybody sick. So that's one lie that led to another.
Yeah, you know, and I laugh, Simon, because although I don't eat a lot of sushi now, I can just imagine walking to a sushi bar and seeing a sign, our sushi is now being cooked well done at the request of the U.S. government. Because I don't think well done sushi is something I want.
What is comforting right now is that the American Public Health Association has called for a nationwide moratorium on CAFOs. They cite 40 reports of indicating health concerns related to CAFOs, we cite 1,000 reports at least. And the health risk, of course, is they agree. Air, water, soil, food, toxic chemicals, infectious diseases, antibiotic-resistant bacteria, and E. coli. And they're calling a moratorium on it. So this is a good thing that's going on right now.
Yeah, and that explains in part why these stats that nearly 17% of Americans suffer food poisoning each year. 1 out of 6 Americans get sick from food every year. About 3,000 die from various illnesses like that. That number, by a lot of other sources, that's the CDC's number, is as high as 10,000, as Ashley pointed out. And I love this quote. This is from the acting director of the CDC. He said, "These are preventable diseases. We need to do more to lower the impact of these diseases in the U.S. Well, let's talk about where some of this comes from. Recently, there have been a lot of tests on genetically modified foods and plants and toxins. When we wrote our book last year, we finished it sometime around September of 2010. It was published, we published It's Not Your Fault, I guess, the first day of the year or the end of December of last year. We opined and gave all sorts of opinions about why the GMO products were causing these type of problems in factory farms and people. Well, since then, there have been about 13 scientific studies linking problems with the genetically modified organisms and organ disruption. They found toxins from these genetically modified crops in human blood, and there was a Canadian test that was so disturbing. Simon, I know you read it too. And there's a great quote out of it. "Fresh doubts have arisen about the safety of genetically modified crops, with a new study reporting presence of BT toxin used widely in GM crops in human blood for the first time." Well, I thought that was a rather kind and nice way of saying it, that they've been finding this for a while in other areas, but the BT toxin for the first time. And so they ran a test at the University of Sherbrooke, which is, you know, in Montreal. And apparently they found one insecticidal protein from the viruses called Cry1AB. It sounds like some type of, Cry1AB is taking over the world. Well, it may well be if it's in genetically modified foods, because 90% of the food you buy in the store or more is genetically modified. So they detected this toxin in fetal blood. In other words, they took the blood, if I recall, Ashley, from the umbilical cord.
Correct. That's correct.
And they found toxins in the blood and the umbilical cord of women who were just giving birth. And the implication, which is something we have, if anyone who reads our book, go to Chapter 8. We discuss this at great length, how these things are passed by mothers to fetuses on. And this test is saying it could pass the next generation, because anything that's in the umbilical cord goes to that fetus. If you want to read the article, it's in being published in the Reproductive Toxicology Journal, and it covered more than 30 pregnant women and 39 women who had come in for tubectomies at the center. None of them had worked or lived with a spouse working in contact with pesticides and had no exposure to any of this. So the only place they could get it through the diet. And when they surveyed them on their diets, it included genetically modified soybeans, corns, potatoes, and other things. So when you take a look at this, there's really no other answer that can be derived. They found this toxin in 93% of materials in which are pregnant women and 80% in blood samples of women who were not. And, you know, it's just
80% was in the fetal sample.
I'm sorry, the fetal samples, and 69% were in the tested blood samples of non-pregnant women. So it is just, it's terrible, because this is the same toxin that they find in the gastrointestinal contents of livestock that are fed the genetically modified corn. The industry knows this. Why? Because I think 70 or 80% of the antibiotics in the United States are sold to factory farms, and they're given to these cattle and dairy cows every single day to keep them from becoming ill. So they know there's a toxin in there. They know there's something causing the acidosis in cattle and dairy livestock. So what do? They give them antibiotics. And Actually, aren't I correct that according to Dr. Tickey, that a normal dairy cow lives 6 or 8 years,
right.
But in a factory farm, they last less than 2, and then when they're old, sick, and diseased, they throw them in the old food plant, what we used to call the glue factory.
That's right. And that's also one of the problems with, again, it gets back to, you know, the diseases that are carried in to the food that we're eating. Two things that you said, Manny, that I'd like to go back on. One is for the fact that all these, and I never have said this, I don't think, in one of the other things that needs to be said, I think. One of the studies, or consistent studies, are when the animal is given the antibiotic, and they're all these factory farm animals have to be given antibiotics because they will, in order to just keep them alive long enough to kill them. And so in doing so, the bacteria that are growing within these animals then become antibiotic resistant. So then you are now going to take in this food with this bacteria that is antibiotic resistant, which is what's causing right now these superbugs. People are having problems because most of these bacteria need an antibiotic. So here you are passing a thing that is within the animal that is now going to be resistant because it's going to fight to stay alive. These bacteria have lived a long time, many centuries. They're fighting to stay alive. New ones are now being created by the genetically modified foods. So now this is going to be passed on to the individual with all of these 86 million people. How soon is it before, and this is going on right now in science, where people don't know if these antibiotics are going to help people. So it's really kind of a thing where you better eat organic. And instead of them covering up the lie, don't cover up the lie. Don't say, you know, we'll just give people, you know, what are they going to do, start giving us antibiotics every time we eat? I mean, is that going to be the solution? Are we going to have vaccines, all of us, to cover up the lie that the diseases that they're covering? I mean, you look at it, you go, what is the next step in science in order to cover up this lie that goes on? And it gets back to that. And many of these foodborne illnesses, if a pregnant mom eats this food, there can be fetal damage. There can be spontaneous abortion. There can be death of that baby. Now, this goes on in any virologist will tell you that. They know this.
Well, let's cut in for a moment. You talk about what can be. Let's talk about what is. First of all,
About prevention when I say can be.
Well, you're also qualifying, but let's stop qualifying for a moment. I think everyone's in agreement that autism is up around the United States. And everybody's floundering around going, gee, why is this happening? Well, nobody wants to point the finger at genetically modified foods because of the incredible might of the industry to literally smite anybody who disagrees with them. So everybody's loath to really attribute these causes to something that could cause them to be criticized or attacked by the food industry. So while all this is going on, the FDA looks the other way. They have no interest whatsoever in telling you the truth, because if they tell you the truth, there'll be a call to Americans to do something about it and a call to Congress, which means acting against the interests of big corporations, and nobody's willing to take that particular function on.
And Manny, to complete the thought, getting back on the antibiotics, there was one thought that I did want to complete. Harvard in 2006, the Harvard School of Public Health study, 135,000 people. People who ate grilled skinless chicken 5 or more times a week had a 52% higher chance of developing bladder cancer compared to people who didn't. Then a recent study by the Translational Genome Research Institute showed nearly one half, that's 47%, of the meat and poultry in the United States grocery stores were contaminated with Staphylococcus aureus, which more than half, 52% of them, the bacteria was resistant to antibiotics. Those are high statistics.
Well, anything above one to me is a high statistic.
If my number's on there at all, it's a high statistic. I don't even want to be able to eat. I can't eat that stuff now. Forget it.
okay, I just want to play, idiot for a second. The antibiotics, I've heard much said about, how people become resistant to antibiotics. But I've also been told many times that, well, it doesn't matter with animals because, they have a short, short lifespan. We're going to top them in 2 years. They'll be on your plate. Game over. And then, then we start with the next generation. But what you're saying, or at least what I think I'm hearing, is that, yes, there isn't a risk with these antibiotics in that they are being transferred to humans. And that means that, unbeknownst to us, we all might be becoming antibiotic resistant.
Absolutely.
Well, not unbeknownst to us, I think there's a litany of articles and comments mm-hmm. throughout the news that this is going on already. There are warnings, all sorts of things, and they're certainly not by accident, Simon. You're right. We are, as a general population, people who eat too much of this food and people who handle too many other types of things like this are having problems with resistance, yes. And that's one of the reasons stats are up, and that's one of the reasons stats and disabilities are up, or even in the industry. Go ahead.
I'm just shocked, absolutely, completely shocked.
Yeah, so are we. And no matter how often we see it, it's just as shocking. We read all of these articles, we read all these releases from various different entities, and we are just shocked time after time about why our country is not taking some action to protect its citizens from these types of problems, especially when it's clear to me that they know these problems and exist. And I just cannot buy into this fact of, oh, gee, the FDA doesn't know, or, oh, gee, the industry doesn't know. First of all, we complain constantly, as do countless people that are looking at this, that the industry doesn't even allow independent testing. Well, what are they afraid of, that we're going to find out the same thing we already know? And the question is, would American businesses, knowing full well they're poisoning Americans and affecting their health, continue to sell products to Americans? Gee, who wants to answer that, please? Of course they would. Just look at Pintos. Ford had no trouble selling Pintos and taking the position that it was cheaper to pay wrongful deaths than it was to fix the car. I mean, what kind of business theory is that?
And for people like Michael Taylor and some of these people at the FDA, when somebody honestly goes to them, like the Hamilton Food and Health Institute, and said, wait a minute, I'm confused about these numbers. Is it really, 1,203,650 with estimates of the salmonellosis, which is in the blood, or of the human being, or is it really just 1,000? And no response. Instead, you can't find it at the FDA now. It's sort of blocked. So the responses of, please come forward, don't just hide your lie, is something that I think needs to be more dealt with cleanly.
Well, yes, getting American industry and American corporate leaders stop lying would be a wonderful addition to our world. We could start with Bernie Madoff, everybody at Enron. How about everybody that got some type of payoff from the bailouts? Gosh, I guess that list is just long in this country of people who just lie, cheat, and steal under the name of a corporate umbrella. Am I being too critical, Simon, or do you feel that way?
No, not at all. I want to go back to something that you said at the very beginning of the program. You were looking at cattle excrement. What did you claim the amount was that was produced in the U.S. per day? I know that I have the world total, but your guess on the U.S. alone.
While we're talking, I'm just double-checking myself. The estimate is somewhere around 97 million cattle in the U.S. Excreting about 1.3 billion pounds of fecal matter today. Take 97 million cattle, multiply it by the published figures of 14 times the human body, which for some people is anywhere from a half a pound to 1.5 pounds, depending upon how many McDonald's are eating a day and how heavy they are. So we averaged out basically a pound a day. So that's 1.3 billion pounds per day. Assuming that I've used a higher figure, it would still be somewhere around 800 million pounds at the very best. So it's between 800 million and 1.3 billion with 150 million gallons a year in a day.
All right. That, in my simple mind, is more bullshit than even comes out of Washington, D.C.
Oh.
We are producing it.
And you know something?
Can't pin the tail on that donkey here.
and it doesn't matter which party you favor because they both tend to do that.
So, Simon, you asked me about the antibiotics. One of the things I want to thank Christina Schrum, who writes for Jefferson County Farmers and Neighbors and does an incredible job. She works with the farmers and talks to them and puts statistical data together that is, and also works with the University of Iowa, and she just does a bang-up job. The Environmental Protection Agency estimated that hog, chicken, and cattle waste, which we have stated before, has polluted 35,000 miles of rivers in 22 states and contaminated groundwater in 17 states. Now, based on the numbers you just heard, imagine how polluted they are. Then, according to the Union of Concerned Scientists, as we said, 70% of all antibiotics produced in the United States, that's 25 million pounds, are fed to chickens, turkeys, pigs, cattle, and CAFOs. As much as 80% of the antibiotic administered orally to the livestock passes through the animals unchanged into the manure pits and lagoons, after which they are spread on croplands where they may run off into the waterways. So if you don't get the antibiotic-resistant bacteria, foodborne bacteria from the actual food itself, you're going to get into the water, you're going to get into the cropland, because those antibiotics are being washed onto your crops, your conventional crops.
You know, Ashley, you remind me all the time that waste from a cattle and other livestock isn't treated. You know, basically when you come into...
CAFOs, right.
When you come in, well, any of them,
right.
Anywhere. When you get to humans, as we all know, there's sewage treatment plants in almost every major city where their sole purpose is to try to reduce and ameliorate the effects of all of this toxic material before it hits some type of disposal. And as Ashley also points out to me periodically, this is one explanation why we have these dead zones all over the world. I mean, it's no accident. I mean, why is it we have dead zones in the Gulf? Because all of this manure goes out some type of, CAFOs or in the Midwest, end up in the Mississippi and other places, and end up being washed down in the Gulf. And here we are today, if you watch the evening news at all, everybody in the evening news has pointed out repeatedly that, guess what? They have so much biodiesel, manure, and other contaminants in the Mississippi with this problem they're having in your neighborhood, Simon, that guess mm-hmm. what? The water's contaminated again. So how do we get past that?
I saw some horrible pictures put out by NOAA of Lake Pontchartrain. And you don't have to be an expert on oceanography to spot the problem.
So I don't have to say there's no scientific data on what you're saying, Simon, so therefore it doesn't count?
You mean you don't, Simon, does that mean you don't have to have a nose for the problem?
Exactly.
Yeah, but, you know, we laugh about it, but it's sad that our country's reached a point where we can't go to our government and get protection from these problems because they favor business over the everyday American in this country. What a terrible thing that says. That if I go, and basically if I went to him and said, I just caught Monsanto doing this horror atrocity, or I caught this CAFO, they just discharged 16 million gallons of fecal matter in Iowa, they'd probably say to me, well, you know, in Iowa that's legal, because as far as I understand it, you're allowed leakage up to 16 million gallons a year from a CAFO in Iowa before you're in any violation of any law. Does anybody want to stop and
think
about that?
There's 5,500 CAFOs in Iowa, so just multiply that.
Yeah.
And the number of animals. Oh, my gosh. Huh?
Here's the real big problem. If you try and back up your claim with a photograph, you're facing
federal
offense.
Right.
It's one more solution. The solution, again, is cover the lie by prosecuting somebody and making them go to jail for having the audacity of taking a picture. Of course, Annette Sweeney in Iowa, who's pushing the law in Iowa, and Jim Nolan in Florida and whoever it is in Minnesota, their whole solution is, and her in particular, is that anybody talking about, even talking about these or showing these photos must be bioterrorist. And we're the ones that are staging this whole thing. You can't stage these stats. You can't stage the end result of the crap they're putting out there, literally.
But, Ashley, you may be able to stage in this world one thing. You might be able to stage two, but the number of various different, photos, videos, and other things on this subject are just amazing. And it's not just Iowa and other places locally. It's all around the world.
Oh, I saw there E. coli. There was a huge E. coli problem in the Chicago River. Simon, it made me so sad. I had to close it off. I didn't want to see the picture. It's $1 billion to do anything for the Chicago River right now. It's so filthy.
Yeah, that's
filled with E. coli. There was an E. coli problem.
Oh, don't you just love American business? And, you know, we're writing, as you know, we have submitted our book, the Food Revolution Papers, which is our take on the Federalist Papers and why ourselves, Ronnie Cummings, Michael Pollan, Eric Schlosser, and all these people are trying to cause change. And we found a series of quotes from various professors who are suggesting that we even go far as to have a Boston Tea Party. And that's how adamant some people are in standing up and saying we've got to stand up and protect ourselves, much like with the fluorocarbons. Right. Before, suppose we could all say that one.
Don't ask me. I'm the one that keeps tripping over my words.
But the problem is if we don't stop and do something about it, it's another phase of global warming in many respects. And in some respects, some of this activity could be described as global warming.
So, I want to get political just for a minute.
Gee, what a shock.
And I'm not much of a political animal. It seems to me that there are a number of different agencies involved here. We have the CDC, we have the FDA, maybe the EPA, the USDA. Are any of them worth their salt, or are they all just paid shills for big food and big pharma?
Well, we say constantly that basically USDA and the FDA are just so influenced politically by political contributions and appointees. They don't protect anyone in the United States except for business.
Which comes down to people have to protect themselves, Simon. And the protection of themselves is go into your grocery store, ask for the organic. when one of the things we're putting together right now, I put together a list this week of where people can actually go to their internet, punch in certain things, and come up with a local grocery store that'll have specifically what they're looking for in organic, even baby food and infant formula. I'm putting a whole thing together that we're working on together for the current book that I'm hoping will help people be able to prevent being sick. And also, the more organic people go, the healthier they will be, and the message will be delivered.
Well, that's one step. But, no, I think the bigger problem is that we cannot look to the government to protect us, which is why we believe this is a food revolution and that we all have to join this revolution together, because the only way you can win this kind of war is to vote with your paycheck and to vote with your checkbook. You know, if you don't support these companies, they will change. And we comment periodically that even Walmart's feeling the pressure. They looked around and they see the trend, and they're finally starting to stock organic foods within their stores. And, well, they should, because people are buying more and more of it, and they're demanding more and better foods for their children. So at some point in here, the question becomes, when do they recognize that they have to change? I don't know the answer to that, but I do know they won't recognize it until everybody gets up and basically, as I said, votes with their checkbook and basically says, I'm not going to buy it. I guess we can steal that line out of the movie Network, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to eat it anymore. Well, that'd be a good one.
There you go. I like that, Manny. That's a good one.
Actually, this week I saw an advert on a TV channel that did catch my attention. It was from the Kashi company. I don't know anything about them, but rather than bragging about how they had stopped using high fructose corn syrup, they took a slightly different approach. And what they said was, you've probably read about high fructose corn syrup and how it's bad for you. We at Kashi want to tell you that we have never used it.
That's great.
So you think our friend Gus will be writing them any posts on their email?
Oh, probably. He's no doubt telling them that their product sucks. You know, it'd be much better with some high fructose corn syrup added.
But you forgot the main ingredient. It's the genetically modified BT corn toxic pesticide high fructose corn syrup. I mean, they need to put the full caption on the label there. And now that they're using the smart stack, they will have to include smart stack in there too. So there's, you know, five more of those toxins that are in that food.
But I just rather like the approach they took.
Oh, I love that approach.
Yeah, I mean the chances are that they've got lots of other ingredients that, you know, are not quite so good for you, but...
Oh, yeah, that's probably why they did this. It was the one thing they could really hang their hat on, so to speak. But, you know, I want to come back to something. You know, why are we selecting these things out, and why are we doing it? Besides the obvious, these stats are just horrifying to all of us, but if you look at our country, we point out repeatedly, and we've had this conversation with many, many guests. In my childhood, this didn't go on. There was one overweight person in my class. We didn't have a bunch of sickly people. They didn't have childhood diabetes. I don't even think I knew what diabetes was till I was an adult. I mean, when you think about the incidence of all this in our country, all of this has become an issue in the last decade or so, after genetically modified foods were added into the diet of Americans. So, you know, when people say, why are you doing this? Well, because I never had to discuss it before. That's one reason. And so now there's a need to discuss it because guess what? It's a problem. And this problem is directly traceable, in my opinion, to the advent of genetically modified seeds, genetically modified foods, and the increase in all these different chemicals into the food. And why the increase in chemicals? Because genetically modified foods are so bland, they taste like cardboard. And all you have to do is pick your favorite vegetable, buy some genetically modified, then go out and buy some organic ones, and cook them side by side and taste them. And you're going to go, oh, my God, this tastes like crap. Because that's what it tastes like.
It goes one way to the other, though, for me right now, Manny, where it's either it tastes like crap or it doesn't have any flavor at all.
Well, that's what I mean. It's tasteless.
It's, right.
And I meant tasteless. I don't want to say that.
No, some of it does taste like crap. I agree. I mean, so what is, you know, how do you describe when you just made this meal when it, oh, it tastes like crap. Anyway,
okay.
I'm sorry.
I just have some hot incoming. And I believe it came from you guys, the Thorpe Equipment Inc.
Oh, yes.
Oh, man, what fun. I'm surprised they don't sell these in Walmart.
Yeah, this device was originally made by the Marquis de Sade Corporation and then passed down to this company. And what it is, they call it, Metabolism crate. Right.
Yes.
So everyone go, what's that? Well, that was my first thing, so I had to go look it up. It's a crate made of stainless steel that I would describe as a cage that they use to put animals into to basically test their manure and draw out to prevent them from spreading the manure within the CAFO because they just don't want all this stuff running loose. So they basically, unbeknownst to me, many of these animals that were complaining about their poor treatment are sitting there all day with a catheter in them. Oh,
Which, of course, adds to bacteria, because that's a whole different bacterial thing there, too. But I guess if they keep pumping them with antibiotics, they can keep covering that lie.
You know, we have friends.
Let me just read you the finer points. that they'll customize it to fit your needs. Flip open side door allows easy access to animal. Screen mesh bottom tray with drain pans. Removable feed bowl and shut off panel. Squeeze top and adjustable side panels. Now, here's my favorite. Adjustable rump bar to stabilize the animal for treatment.
You're talking about basically in the hospital they would call that a Foley catheter with a bag. So that only
right.
Instead of a bag, it's a box, and they've got a tube that they're sticking up this animal to collect its urine.
And of course for ultimate portability, heavy duty swivel casters with locks for stability.
Could you imagine doing that to a prisoner in a jail? It would be considered cruel and inhuman punishment.
Oh. Any listeners that want to check this out, their website is www.thorpeequipment.com.
Simon, I think it's worthy of you posting that one. I do. You really should post that with a picture.
Well, I will. Later blog.
Forget it, Simon.
I'm kidding. Our readers should be able to look at the latest Marquis de Sade invention. Why not? But, you know, Simon, right. It goes to the mentality of these people who can treat an animal with that level of cruelty and not be bothered by it. And, you know, we have friends who are somewhat liberal, and one of them is pretty wacky, vegetarian, and she basically would just go into an absolute fit over this. She once walked out at a dinner at a very expensive, famous Beverly Hills restaurant because the guy next to her ordered a steak and had the nerve to eat it in front of her. So
bloody rare. Before they had all this foodborne illness problems.
Yeah, and you know, when I look back on it, there are people in this world that are so grossed out about this, they just can't deal with it. And yet people do this every day to animals in the business, you know. So when I listen to Nat Sweeney do that, you give that little speech about bioterrorists, I wonder if she walked out into a yard and started torturing an animal because it was just that time of day.
No, she wouldn't. She would allow, she'd allow her hired hands to do it. As well, I guess it's okay as long as somebody else does it. You know?
I can see the morning instruction. Okay, I want you to get this work done, but remember, no photos.
Don't take any pictures.
Right. And don't forget that rump stabilizer bar.
You know, if this were West Hollywood, you'd get yourself in trouble.
I'm thinking about buying some and reselling them on eBay, you know, in the S&M department.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
And the torture department is more like it. Yeah, you know, I would like to get back on track a little bit about what we were talking for just a second, if we can.
Sure.
Is that okay? One of the things that we have said in our blogs with the CAFOs that I wanted to specifically point out, once we're going back to the big lie, I mean, you know, stick a tube up them and that'll take care of that problem, you know what I mean? But this particular thing, we have said over and over, is that most independent scientists and researchers agree that a grass-fed diet would eliminate 80% of E. coli in cows' digestive tracts. Feeding cattle corn causes E. coli.
Yeah.
One big lie after another, right?
Yeah, and by the way, that's the one of the problems with the salmonella in chickens, is that chickens essentially are now being fed corn, which is not on their normal diet either. So basically what we have is a situation where they're force-feeding animals corn that don't want to eat
and
corn.
Soy.
I
don't know if they're doing soy to them. I think soy, GMO soy. So you're taking pesticides into them. And Simon, I didn't send you this week's recall list because it was just so ridiculous. I couldn't get over it. There were pages and pages of recalls this week. Did you know about that, Simon?
No, I didn't know about this week's recall.
But last week, you know, there was 19. The week before is 15. But again, like everything else, different things go on different lists, which means that that's not a complete list. So this may strictly be processed food, maybe vegetables on another list, maybe meat on another list, maybe chickens on another list. So you never really get a full list of what's going on in the total picture. And when right now, I went to the FDA this morning just to double check, and there were pages and pages of recalls that I had never heard of, including pet food, cheeses, you know, things that are, that vanilla. I mean, there were things that should be posted daily, I think, in the daily paper. And it's very, very important for people to go to that site, go to the FDA site or go to statistics and look at or recalls and look what the recalls are before you go to the market. We said that last week. I'm going to say it again because it's really important.
You know, it's funny. We spoil our pets. Gee, not like any other American,
no,
right?
No, we spoil them rotten. Love my animals.
And we were disturbed that our last pets, we thought, died prematurely because of these kind of foods. And we've been feeding our cats basically a genetically modified diet-free, you know, thing. So at the end of the day, you know, I kind of look around and I look at how much healthier our cats are than other cats. And then I start seeing the recalls and I'm going, oh my God, how many recalls are there for pets? And I think the average person has no clue that so many of the foods that they feed their pets are being recalled every day.
And then the outcome is, since a lot of these particular foodborne illnesses and even to our pets, our diarrhea, our intestinal inflammation, like Camp bacteria causes an upper and lower or small and large intestinal inflammation, which are, you know, IBD, IBS, and Crohn's, and it's happening in the animals. And the animals start throwing up and they start getting sick, and someone will say, oh, gee, they must have eaten something outside, when it's actually the pet food.
Yeah.
So you have to really check the recall list.
Now, whoever
Do you have any high spots for this week's recall list? Like Twinkies or?
You know, I did.
You know, the foods like Twinkies are never the ones recalled.
Oh, I know why I don't have it, because I had problems with my computer. I couldn't print them. So I'm winging it today. So you get a winging. But I would definitely look at any listener to go to the FDA recall and or just look up recall, and you'll see a whole list of the current recall for this particular week. And
I'm
some of them
guessing,
actually were surprising, some cheeses and things. And again, vanilla from Madagascar, which we just used vanilla from Madagascar in our ice cream.
That was recalled?
It was recalled.
Oh, gosh, ruined my day.
Yeah, we didn't actually want to know it, but we have to know it, so.
And that's
I'm guessing it's FDA.gov is the
right,
website.
Exactly. Right,
yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. So the bottom line is you can't trust anybody in the food industry any longer, and you can't trust them to tell the truth. You can't trust them to provide food on your table that is safe because they don't care. All they want is what they're basically going to get in terms of profits. This is corporate America. Remember them. They're the ones who basically have been violating every rule in our country, paying off people. We've got everything from the Enrons of this world down the line, people, Pfizer and Vioxx and Celebrex and Merck and all these different countries. When is the last time anyone, our listeners, feels that a U.S. corporation is told them the truth about something? And that's an interesting question. And so when they start telling you, oh, don't worry, believe what we're saying, trust us, we did our own test, do you want to trust them? I don't. Do you trust them? Probably not. It's very, very hard to gather any level of trust for these people. Do you feel differently, Simon?
No. Actually, believe it or not, about the only people I trust is my local bank, because they haven't messed with me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Give them time.
Oh, I'm sure they will eventually, but so far, no, life has been good.
Well, I'm glad to hear it, because when you have trouble with your bank, it's usually a very, very bad day for Americans. But, you know, coming back very seriously for a moment, we push this over and over again, and it may sound alarming to people, and sometimes friends of mine say to me, oh, you know, I don't have that problem. It doesn't do that to me. And I go, well, yeah, we'll see how you go in a few years. And recently a friend of mine at lunch was saying that, and Ash and I watch him walk away semi-limping and kind of moaning about the way we feel.
Put weight on. I mean, it's just like instant weight overnight while not doing anything, which says he's definitely got inflammation going on. And, you know,
but the point of what I'm saying is America is clearly in denial. And when you look around your family members, your friends, and other people around you, and you watch them, and just watch their symptoms, watch, you know, how they come home complaining about how they feel, or how many Zantac or some other antacid they're taking every day, and you look at what people do versus what they say, you'll see how much larger problem it is. Or you sit down with people, and the first thing they say is, oh, I got this relative in the hospital. I've got to visit that relative. This person's ill. I've got to go to a funeral. I mean, I hear those every single day, and I look around at people that I know died. And one of them I should give a moment of tribute to, Ross Hagen, an actor we've known forever who made a variety of films with Elvis. Basically died at 72. Well, we've known him a long time, and he's.
And I did a movie with him as a lead a few years ago, a few years back.
Time Wars, which they mentioned in the obituary, which made us all cringe.
I remember that movie.
Yeah.
His best was clearly Dinosaur Island, but all joking aside, he was a health fanatic who lived off Mulholland Drive in the West San Fernando Valley. He jogged every day. He was very cautious about what he ate, but he still ate genetically modified foods because he didn't know any better. So at the end of the day, all of his efforts to be a health fanatic didn't help him at all. He died of the same reasons the lazy slugs in front of their TV die from, and that is the quality of food that they're eating. The difference is, he thought he was doing a good job. And that's the moral of all of this is, you may think you're eating properly. You may think that what you're eating is good for you or healthy choices. But in reality, if it's not organic, it's not healthy. as I
and
say,
even,
and I want to end this comment, and I say this to vegetarians all the time. If you're eating genetically modified food, you can die just as quickly as someone who eats red meat. And, vegetarians need to consider that, too. They're not safe from this, and they're not exempt from this conversation. I'm sorry, Ashley.
Well, I was just going to say when you said that about the soy, because a lot of the substitution that happens with people who are vegan are they do soy, which is a whole different program. And, of course, eating genetically modified soy is you're eating all these toxins and pesticides, five times the amount of pesticides used on these plants. And so it's not a safe program, and it's bad for the thyroid and causes a whole different type of illness. But, again, eating healthy is eating organic.
Even good soy is bad. The
right.
recommendation is a very small amount.
That's right.
You know, yumming down a big block of soy for dinner probably isn't a very good idea.
No, and I used to do that. It's like, oh, yeah, someone said this is healthy. I saw it in an ad, you know. But I know better now.
Yeah, and so hopefully our listeners will readdress some of these. And if you don't believe us, do the research yourself, because I'll tell you, the more you look at this, is the more you're going to agree with this, and the more shocked you're going to be.
I continually say, this can't be real. This can't be real. This is, and I keep saying, and I keep looking for new research to say, this can't be real. And the more research we do, and the more I look at things, and the more Manny looks at things, and it's just the more you look at things, Simon. It's just I'm very sad that we've allowed CAFOs and factory farms and animal abuse to the point that the animals are paying us back with the diseases that these places are carrying or making these animals carry.
Well, Simon, before we go today, I have a question I want to ask you. You've been looking at this now for about 6 or 8 months, and I know you do your own research. You don't want to admit it to all of us, but we know you sneak around the Internet looking for stuff. Have you seen anything that disagrees with us?
No, absolutely nothing. And that's probably what bothers me. You know, if you're wrong, I'm wrong because I talked to you, I've read your books. If we're so completely wrong, why isn't there someone or something that can say, hey, guys, you're completely wrong?
Yeah, and by the way, we're not the only ones to say this, are we?
No, we're not. But we don't have the funding from Big Food and Big Pharma to do the research.
Well, and by the way, they wouldn't give us the seeds anyway. Monsanto does not cooperate with independent researchers. So at the end of the day, that doesn't help anyone either.
Now, we pulled out a quote we used in the book the other day, and it is, Monsanto believes they never had to ever do scientific testing because everything they're doing is nature identical. So you can find mm-hmm. pesticides in nature, therefore, and even though it's in their plant, and even though it's genetically altered, and even though it's not the same plant, they believe because they say it's natural, therefore they don't have to test it. I mean, it's an admittance that they never do testing.
There's a quote that comes to my mind, and I won't say it on air because it's a little rude, but it goes along the lines of, rearrange this into a well-known phrase or saying, off F.
Well, we're ending the show right now. We're going to end on this note. Please eat better. Please look at what you eat more closely. And please consider these thoughts that if you don't do this one day, you're going to be a statistic. I am already a statistic. I have survived two different diagnoses of cancer. I have survived two cancerous tumors. But I survived it because I got up one day and stopped doing what the industry wanted me to do, which is eat genetically modified foods. So don't be like me. Don't be a statistic. Find a life where you can eat genetically modified foods, which taste better.
Free.
Yeah, live to see, or free of genetically modified foods, and live to see your grandchildren, live to see your great-grandchildren if you're lucky, but don't become a statistic in today's society. Thanks for listening. We're down to the last minute. Any last thoughts, Ashley?
One thing I want to do a wrap-up on the foodborne illnesses is that I started off joking about this, but it is not a joke, where anytime you, if you are going to eat factory-farmed meats, actually I would glove and make sure that you wash the counters down, make sure you take your plastic wrappers that have blood on them, keep them away from children. If you touch the meat that may have the E. coli or have these camp bacteria in it or the various problems in it, wash your hands, clean the counter, use alcohol on that counter, and make sure that that'll also cut down on some of the bacteria that you take in. And, of course, you have to cook the heck out of your eggs and your food. And that's also part of the listing of what's on the CDC list to protect yourself. And I pray that all of you stay healthy. It's not to frighten you with the statistics. It's to make you aware of the statistics on keeping you healthy and to prevent you from being one of those 86 million people this year.
So be healthy, be well, and we'll see you next week.
This is Simon Barrett, and I want to wish all of our listeners a happy and healthy and safe week. We'll be back again next Saturday, assuming that the rapture doesn't start at 6 p.m. Pacific today.
So happy end of
week.
The world, everybody.
I'm going shopping.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And in fact, if it does, Manny, you took the words right out of my my mouth. You know, happy end of the world. Till next week, this is Simon Barrett, Manny Barling, Ashley F. Brooks, wishing everyone a good day. Next time. Bye.